Morning, Judy.
I thought about how I got here, how my mom is sitting on this cushion with all these little eyes looking at me. And it was kind of a hard story to think about. I don't think I really had a beginning. I wasn't in search of religion or a spiritual path or anything. I was just kind of traipsing through life. And I don't really have much of a middle, I don't think, because I'm kind of experiencing things now. And if it's, I don't think we really have an end either. It's a Zen thing, right? There's no end. So I'm like, how am I going to write this story? So how did I get here? So growing up, we didn't really talk about religion or politics or anything. And for a family of eight to sit down at dinner every night with each other, I don't recall us talking about a whole lot of things of substance. There was a lot of jibber jabber, and there was a lot of chopsticks clanging on rice bowls, but that's kind of what I remember. I grew up in the role of daughter number four. You know, there were six kids, and the first child was big sister, second child was little sister, third child was daughter number three. I'm daughter number four, and that's what I was called at home too, four. Child number five, finally, for my parents, was a son. And the son kind of defines a Chinese family. And a little while later, we had a little sister. So daughter number four just meant, going to school, doing chores, trying to lay low, not getting caught in the being one of six. There's just a lot of stuff going on, there's a lot of it could be fun, and then there was a lot of also, hierarchy that comes with being so many kids, and being fourth, kind of on the lower half, where things kind of drop down and you get bossed around. But I couldn't boss anybody around because it was the brother after me. You didn't boss him around, and I don't know, maybe just kind of made me a little resentful. Kind of got stuck in this spot. I think the thing that I figured out along the way that really irked me was that. My father would never see me, as he saw his son. And somehow that was really important to me. And a lot of that just kind of shaped who I am. In the way I just kind of took care of my responsibilities and just kind of kept my head down and didn't really look for much in the way of connection, maybe, and then recognition, So, daughter number four. My sisters and I were close, even with all the growing up, usual stuff. I had great friends growing up. These are friends from grammar school, junior high, high school, and they're still my friends now. I was in and out of relationships, and it didn't really seem to bother me. Have fun for a couple of years and kind of move on. And I would always finally, kind of hear myself say, oh, she was really nice, and she had a good heart, da-da-da, but. And finally I thought, well, crap, then what is it about me? And that started me thinking. That started me thinking about how I engage with the world, the people that I had around me, how I picked and choose or had this process, in my head, how I fixed on on how I chose people to be around. So I decided that I was going to try and do something different. Yet I was going to put myself into a situation where it wasn't up to me to do that. So I signed up for this hiking class. And I went, I was waitlisted. The teacher decided to keep me. She thought it was beneficial to have a paramedic, you know, in class. So that was good. And the first day, there was another new student, and he had asked if anybody wanted to carpool, you know. And against everything about me, I'm controlling, I want to be the driver, I always want to have my car with me, you know, have all my stuff with me. But I said, yes, you know, I'll carpool with you. So every week we met up and to drive through our hikes. And he became one of the dearest people, you know, in my life. My coworkers deemed him my 80-year-old boyfriend. I talked about him so much. He was a retired psychiatrist. So, you know, I got a car ride with him every week. It's like, hey. And, you know, maybe I was the age of his children. And so we had a lot of conversations, and maybe we just related in a different way where he didn't feel like he was parenting me, but yet he got the kind of perspective of someone the age of his children. In that class, I also met Max Sadazan. And one day somebody said, hey, you know, I found this hiking trip in Switzerland. Does anybody else want to go? So, you know, I've never used my passport, never been out of the country. I thought, sure, I'll go. And so I jumped right into that. And through that is where I met Ed. We met in the lobby of our first hotel, Kandersteg? Yeah, that's Max's husband. So, and that's where I, you know, and I apologize for not remembering better, but he shared something about being a priest or practicing Zen, and I boiled it all down in my head about to sitting. I thought, well, I can sit. Probably said something very insensitive, like, well, I can sit on a rock for hours. You know? So I figured when I came back, I would sit. I wanted to hang out with Ed, and something going on that I wanted to spend more time with. And he kind of touched me in a way that I wasn't sure what it was, but I wanted to find out. 3 weeks, I guess, prior to this trip, I was at the place in the house doing my routine mammogram, and they have you wait in a waiting room, check your films, come out and tell you, yeah, it's okay, you know, go and we'll see you next year. This time the radiologist came out, and she said, you know, we noticed, well, I'm Dr. So-and-so, we noticed some architectural distortion and blah, 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 blah in your films, and it's indicative of cancer. I stared at her for a while. I'm like, I said, could it be anything else? And she said, no. I just kind of thought, well, I don't really like you very much. It's not how I thought of spending my day. So I sat down, I waited, some patient navigator comes out, and she took me into this tiny little office. You know, she sat on one side of the desk, I sat on the other side of the desk, and neither one of us moved. And she talked to me about appointments and follow-ups and things like that, and just kind of stared at me, and she stared at each other. And I realized she was waiting for me to react. Kind of freak out or get mad or something. And I remember all I really was concerned about is, I leave for Switzerland in 3 weeks. Is this going to get in the way? She said, no, go to Switzerland, we'll take care of all this, you know. And so we end up talking about traveling and other things, and got my appointment, set me on my way. So when I came back, I kind of dropped into the role of a patient now. You know, I'm daughter number four. I've been a paramedic for years and years. And through my patients, I learned how to be a caregiver. You know, I used to be a paramedic because it was just fun, you know, that you would go and this company would hire you and they'd fit you for uniforms and they'd give you keys for an ambulance and say, there, go drive around the city, you know, and you get to drive code 3. It's awesome. And they pay you for this too. So, you know, after this diagnosis, I just dropped into this patient mode. It seemed pretty easy because I just, you know, I knew there were appointments, I follow direction, I'll go where you tell me to go, take whatever test you take. Clinical trials, sure, you know, I'll do those. And whatever it was, it just sort of followed along. I'll spare you all the gory details with the complications and, you know, getting to surgery and after that. And after surgery, then it's radiation. And I remember going in to meet the oncologist, getting set up. And I would go in every week. And I'm like, come on, am I ready for radiation? And she's like, no, you still have some swelling. Your arm's swelling. I'll wait till it heals a little better. I'm like, oh, fine. I'll come back next week. And I'd go and, you know, do my physical therapy and everything, go back next week. I'm like, come on, am I ready? You know? She's like, no, come on, let's wait. So during this whole time, what I didn't realize that was this waiting and everything, and it was just kind of peeling away at me, you know. Work was terrible. They had put me on, well, my boss very generously allowed me to do whatever it was I needed. You know, I came off of my 48-hour rotation as a field supervisor, and he said, you can help us with projects in the office, just do this, that, whatever you're up for. You can come in for a couple hours, you can just whatever you're up for, whatever you need. I thought, great. So the project turned out that we were being audited by the EMS agency, which meant we needed to put together all our documents of training and, I mean, just everything for the prior year. And it turned out to be a nightmare. I ended up spending 40, 60 hours at work going through this audit. I was angry. I was not getting along with coworkers and feel like somebody was doing too much, somebody wasn't doing enough. I mean, we were a bunch of field medics kind of thrown into this role, you know, to answer to an audit. And so I was angry at my boss, like, why are we doing this? Why aren't you just hiring, you know, a team? And somewhere along the way, I got to the point where during my radiation treatments, I went up to my doctor one day and I said, I need your help. And I can't remember how many times in my life I've ever said those words, I need help. And she said, okay, what do you need? I said, I need help not to hurt people. She says, oh. She sat down, she put a folder down, said, tell me what you mean by that. So we talked about it and you know, she wanted to put me on antidepressants, and I said, I'm not depressed. And she goes, yeah, I'll just help even you out. I said, I'm not depressed. I don't get low. I just know that these things happen. I get very angry, or I want to go pick fights. I said, I'm going to hurt someone. You know, if I don't hit them, at least I'm going to pick a lot of fights, and I'm going to hurt a lot of feelings. She said, okay. She goes, I'll give you something for it, but you got to talk to the social worker. I said, fine. I'll talk to whoever you want me to talk to. So I checked in with the social worker. We had a couple of conversations, talked about my family, talked about work, things like that. Then what it bought me weekly sessions with the social worker. And, you know, it was nice to have an opportunity to just kind of rant and rave about what was going on. But I don't think I still knew what I needed. And when all that was done, and I was done with my treatment, she kind of cut me loose. You know, it was like, okay, we're done with this bullshit. We're on your way now. Mm-hmm. And it was right around then that I started sitting. Figured I was done with my treatments, and that's kind of how, what I had thought in the beginning. I'll finish, you know, taking care of this, and then I'll go sit with Ed. I came, I started sitting. And I remember first day, you know, getting instructions. I remember Michael Smile. I remember a lot of you. It was just this kind of a warm, inviting, and it just felt kind of right, you know, to be here. And I've been sitting ever since. I can't imagine what else to do. I don't think I, well, I know I didn't sit like I sit now. Because I just sat. I sat for 20 minutes, I walked for 5 minutes, and I sat for 20 minutes. I listened to the discussions, and, you know, sometimes you say things as they are, things as it is. I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. You know, you know, wherever you are, you're here. I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And then you have a talk like last week, and I thought, yeah, what? are you kidding me? And I'm okay with that, because that's you know, that's what I've learned that this is about. Things have really clicked for me. I think Ed said one day that it's about, think about kindness. You know, if you do everything with some kindness, I thought, oh, okay, I can go out and try to do that. And then another time he said, well, you know, you try. If you don't get it right the first time, you get to do it again. I thought, oh, that's really cool. And that's what I've been doing, you know, just sitting here and trying to be present, recognize moments, really enjoy the wonder ones, and look at the ones that don't go so right and figure, you know, they're part of life, and see what we can do with them. It did, though, without me really realizing it, consciously working on it, kind of put me back together. You know, like I said, I went before just having these different roles of being a daughter, being a paramedic, and you know, being a patient, and those relationships. But I realized that I never really thought about what I wanted, you know, as a person, and where I fit as a person. And this, you know, after just kind of having all that kind of blown apart by the cancer, I found myself just kind of being put back together in a way that was just, you know, I'm still a paramedic, I'm still daughter number four, and I'm still all these things, but I'm Trudy, you know, more so than those other things now, but those things are just part of me. And I think that's kind of what keeps me here. You know, that this practice is one that you be kind and, you know, treat people with compassion. And a big lesson was, you know, to do that for yourself first, to be able to do that for others. So those are my baby steps, and I think I have a lot more of them. You know, I've really been appreciated practicing with all of you. That's about it. So thank you all for being my teachers.
Lovely.
So we shouldn't call you number four.
Only in Chinese. If you're going to do it, you got to do it right. I don't remember being, called four since, echoes of it since moving away from home. And then I found that I called my mom a few weeks ago, and I called myself that. Hi, Mom, this is four.
I remember the quality of quiet that you had from the very first time you sat. I remember when you first came. And I thought, this woman has been sitting a long time. And I think that you have, in so many ways, had to cultivate that throughout your life, from your childhood, a kind of silence. But the quality of your connectedness is what really touches me. When we did our first practice period together, I knew I wanted to get to know you, and you just keep unfolding in this really beautiful way. I'm so, so happy to be your friend.
Thank you.
Thank you for your beautiful talk. So from the heart, so natural and down to earth, like you.
Thank you for your friendship, too. Only recently, and I think more since we've come back from Tassajara, occurred to me one day that being quiet wasn't the same as silence. And just sitting wasn't zazen. And so I've been playing with that, and spending more time with it. I love coming to Fridays and sitting. It just felt natural. Boom, plop down, there you go, have our talk, go have tea. I was never inspired to sit at home or anywhere else. And then one day, Celeste shot me a picture. Hope you don't mind sharing. She shot me a picture of her sitting, her zabutan or something, and her dog Vito curled between her legs. and I think you were facing a wall. I thought, oh, I can do that. How cute is that? And I did. I'm a very visual person. I guess just seeing, and I thought, I can see myself doing that. So I threw down my pillow and blanket and found a wall, and I've started sitting at home. So thank you for that.
And without Vito.
And without Vito. I hope you have an offering one day or something.
Thank you for your talk. Talked about your talk. It was, as Abby said, just so natural. I don't know if I have a question, really, just a comment. When you talk about your mean self or your self that picked fights, I can't even imagine. I mean, it's just been so easy to get to know you, and it's been such a nice, measured, sort of slow process,
yeah.
And I think of you as so in tune and caring always. You check in with me, and I really appreciate it. I'm so happy to be sitting with you, and then also sewing with you, which was a wonderful experience.
So, yeah, great.
Thank you.
I hung on to a lot of preconceived ideas of me too. I don't think I really learned how to communicate. We didn't work our way through fights and things like that. We just get mad at each other and decide not to talk to someone until you got over being angry with them. I was stubborn, I was stubborn and I was proud of it, and whatever I believed in, I thought was right, and you could prove me otherwise, you know, didn't set up for very fun conversations with people. I was judgmental and critical and, whether it was just through my childhood or being a paramedic, you know, when you ask questions, I wanted certain answers so I can figure out what to do. And I think that's what I mean, that my patients taught me to be a caregiver, that it wasn't me going in there and getting something, you know, from them. I was there to give them care, and the only way I could do that was to listen to them and find out what it was that they needed. And many of them don't need their lives saved, and that wasn't important. They were just in some sort of a crisis mode, or they were just in some place that they needed some help. And whether that was just giving them a ride to the hospital, was opening the door for them, was figuring out their medications for them, the amount of gratitude, you know, that they give for something like that, it just taught me a little more about being a caregiver, and step a little bit away from that being pushy side of me.
Well, I just want to add, now that you've done your list that you gave about your theme, the four and the holding on, being right, fighting, we are even more deeply connected. I mean, I can relate to that, and I wonder what, you know, this being, I was the third sibling and a bunch of, yeah. So, it's interesting to hear it in this way and see our other connection.
Yeah, I think I kind of tuned into that when we took the precept class. You know, that was something else. Right. I probably wouldn't have, you know, my previous life done. And you say, there's a precept class, or they're like, okay. But that was one of those times that they got a little more of the formal, you know, teachings about Zen. But it was connecting to people, the other people in the class, you know, about sharing and how to make, how to put it into practice, you know, in day-to-day life, and that people were sharing things the way they were, having a safe place to kind of share my things, start letting things out. So.
Thank you very much for letting me into you a little bit, to learn a little more about you. I was definitely related to the controlling part, you know, the wanting to be in control. And I know for me it comes from a really scared place. Mm-hmm. But I was really, really impressed that you could go and ask for help. That was just so touching to me, because you could be there when other people needed help, and that you could translate that into your needing help and going and doing something about it. I was very moved by that.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Karen.
Thank you. You so beautifully described things as it is in a way that, you know, made that live, that phrase live for me. And I've seen, because you also went through the paramitas, the Paramita class, and you've shown over and over again your, I know you committed to generosity in such a deep way, and I keep learning about generosity from you. I just wondered if you could say a little about that, because you embody it so deeply and beautifully.
I think I start becoming more aware, you know, through our practice periods and things, and the first time to pick an intent, you know, to practice. it was like following direction, I'm going to do this, okay, let's do it. It became a little more organic, especially the second time around, and things that you know, as things started to permeate and absorb, I think. I think through all that, just starts treat each other as human beings, and I don't think you could do anything else but be kind and generous.
Trudy, I must leave. You are a remarkable, lovely person. Bless you, my child.
Thank you for your talk, Trudy. I know you so well from the stitching. It all seems like Trudy. Certainly you getting up there to give this talk is a big manifestation of generosity. I think anybody who takes that seat and is willing to open up, you know, their lives for other people to see is, you know, brave and generous. So thank you for doing that. In your talk, I felt kind of a snag in me. You know, I think it was so brave and also humbling for you to approach your doctor and say, I need help. So few people actually have the courage to do that, the humility to go in and say, I need help. Particularly, you know, and I maybe kind of like you, a little bit compulsive, a little bit obsessive, a little bit stubborn, a little bit controlling.
A little bit.
Yeah. And it was wonderful that your doctor responded in the way that she did and found you the kind of support that you needed. And then it was over with, and I kind of felt like, wait a minute, mm-hmm. Is Trudy done? Mm-hmm. You know? So did you find that was an abrupt kind of a fissure in your process of working with all of this frustration and judgment and anger and things? I mean, did you just put it down and walk out the door? Or is it still, are you still working with it?
Yeah, I walked out of there and there's this anticlimactic end to treatment, you know. The therapists are really great, you know, the crew that actually puts you through the machine every day. They sent you off with this little certificate, you know, saying good job, and they put little golfing stickers on it, and the giant stickers, you know, things that they learn about you. They personalize these certificates. I walked out of there in pieces, you know, and not even knowing what I was going to do about that. I think it was the same time I just started sitting. And in a way, it did kind of take care of itself. Everything just kind of swept back together in a less structured, you know, or what Trudy thought, you know, it should be. And it's a much nicer place to be.
When somebody said embody, I really understood that about you, because I very don't often meet somebody that is so available. I mean, and that's how I experience you. If kind of like if something went wrong, I would go to you, to a person like you, or a person that had those qualities. And what strikes me is, you know, how modest you are about something that comes so natural to you. And I mean, hearing the struggle that you went through makes it even more real for me about you, because I think you can't help people unless you've been broken a little bit yourself. And you know, this was, you were talking about being broken a little bit, and I think it just made you a stronger person. I mean, some people, they remain broken, they don't suddenly reform it into the kind of thing that you've done. So I feel very good knowing you. More than that, I feel good experiencing you. Because you're the embodiment of the thing that you're talking about and the things that we talk about. But I don't want that to go to your head.
It's okay, it'll swirl around and like fall out in here or something. But I appreciate it. Thank you.
I meant to go to your heart, not your head.
Thank you.
Thank you, Trudy. You know, you hear this term Buddha nature kind of thrown out there all the time, and honestly, the minute I got here, I just felt that sense from you right off the bat. Like you were always sitting your whole life. Like you grew up sitting. You were just that girl, and it was felt so comfortable to be around you. Are you a Buddhist now?
I am what I am. Sitting here. is that a cop out or a safe answer? I'm sorry. I guess, you know, before I used to be resentful, and I'm not being defined by anything. I don't have any labels or anything. So that hasn't, you know, I don't know. Maybe sorry. I don't know much enough about being a Buddhist to say whether I am or not.
Okay.
But I know I'm going to continue this practice.
That's okay. We know you're a bodhisattva. Yeah. don't need to know anything about it.
Yep. Well, here you are. You come with this big sign. there is the quiet side of you. But do I think you can get into fights and be big in that situation? Absolutely. You've got a giant side. And it has to do with determination. You know, that little quiet girl who just motors into things, takes them on, and does them. You know, and those are awesome qualities, giant qualities. And, you know, I know it reflects the team you love, but in fact, as I keep looking at it, I think there is that in you. And it is, I think, part of what we all respond to when we think about how competent you are, how powerful you are, you know, in your quietness. And so thank you for sharing that in your own quiet way all the time, and then specifically today. So thank you.
Well, I want to say that you're, what did we say before? I was going to say, oh, no, it wasn't like that. I was going to tell. Anyway, thank you, Trudy. And I just sort of like to tell everybody that her competence is in many, many things. And if ever you fall flat on your face on the street, and Trudy is next to you, she's there. You know, she's there. Can you breathe? Can you move your feet? Can you turn your head? You know, so that competence is good to have her around. Anyway.
All without losing our ice cream.
Right.
Both our ice creams made it into the ambulance.
Yeah, but I lost. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Anyway, she's a very wonderful, competent Buddha, Bodhisattva. Indeed. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Trudy. I really appreciate you, and I really appreciate your stepping forward. And I agree with everything that everybody said, and the one piece that I really love about you, in addition to all of that, is your enormous ability to laugh, no matter what's going on, but to laugh from a very deep place. And you're one of my favorite people to laugh with, as well as other things. But it comes from such a place of joy. It's not just, ha ha, it's just a place of joy.
And I remember a little trip that you and Meredith and I took where we pretty much laughed for 4 hours, the entire duration of that trip. It was such a joy, and you're such a joy.
Thank you.
So thank you for that, too.
Thank you for your friendship, too. That was a good day. It was Buddha's and beach, right?
So
how
beach.
Can you not laugh?
Remember the day. Yes. Yes, yes.
Can I add one more thing? I just wanted to say that your humility, too, I mean, it just goes without being said. It's such a beautiful quality.
Well, I guess the one thing I would say is I was certainly glad when Max said, do you want to go to Switzerland? I said, oh, okay, I'll go to Switzerland, because meeting you and having our relationship develop since then has been the best part of that Switzerland trip. Mm-hmm. So thank you for your wonderful talk, and I look forward to practicing with you in the future.
Thank you. Thank you.